Sidonie sagged with relief.
That's the third lock. Green light opens it.
And the other four? Said Tea Time.
In time.
We have lots of time.
Oh, right.
Sidonie stared mournfully at the fourth lock. Mr. Tea Time. The assassin turned as Medium Dave stepped onto the landing. Someone else is in the tower. They've got cat's eye. Tea Time sighed. Some of the Tooth Fairy's employees, I assume. Why are you telling me? I'm paying you big strong men a lot of money to deal with this sort of thing. And the girl's gone. Really? I thought I said she should be killed. We thought, well, you never know. She wasn't necessary. Few people are. Tea Time walked across to the stairwell and looked down. Well, I'm sure they will find us. It's probably too much to hope that they intend something heroic. Violet and Bilious hurried down the stairs.
Do you know how to get back? Said Violet.
Don't you?
I think there's a kind of soft place you go through.
You know where it is?
No, I've never been here before. All I ever did was take the teeth from under the pillows. I know I made that mistake with little William Rubin, but...
Mistake?
He slept with his head under the pillow. As they give you the pliers anyway, and no one told me that you shouldn't...
She certainly did have a pleasant voice, Bilious thought, like a talking flute.
What sort of godding do you do?
This and that. I'm self-employed, actually.
A self-employed god?
Well, if any other god wants, you know, a holiday or something, I cover for them. I'm very busy. Rushed off my feet.
Are you covering for anyone right now?
Yes, the god of hangovers, actually.
A god of hangovers? How awful!
Bilious looked down at his stained and wretched toga. I suppose it is. And then someone was holding a sword to his throat.
What's this? Said Chicken Wire. Lover's Lane? You leave him alone! Shouted Violet. He's a god! A god, eh?
Bilious swallowed, but very gently. It was a sharp sword. But out of the corner of his eye he was sure he could see shadows moving very fast across the walls.
Dear me, out of thunderbolts, are we?
There was a creak. Bilious saw Chicken Wire's expression change. The man's eyes rolled. He trembled slightly. He looked up at the thing on the landing above.
Who put that there?
Said Violet. It was just a wardrobe. Dark oak, with a bit of fancy woodwork glued on. The sword clanged on the floor.
No, no, no! Chicken Wire whined. No, I don't wanna!
He tottered up the stairs.
Help me!
What's the matter? It's just a wardrobe. The door of the wardrobe swung open. Chicken Wire managed to grab the sides, and for a moment he stood quite still. Then he was pulled into the wardrobe in one sudden movement, and the door slammed shut. The little brass key turned in the lock with a click. We ought to get him out, said Bilious, running up the stairs.
Why? They are not very nice people. That one made suggestive comments.
Bilious turned the key and opened the doors. Oh, dear. He reached down and picked up a pair of boots.
Is it magic?
Said Violet nervously.
There are magic wardrobes. If you go into them, you come out in a magic land.
Bilious looked at the boots again. Yes.
I think I must tell you something, said Death.
Yes, I think you should, said Ridcully. We thought something must have happened to the Hogfather. We were right, right?
Hex was right, Arch-Chancellor.
Hex? What is Hex?
Hex thinks, that is, calculates, that there's been a big change in the nature of belief today.
Mr. Hex was remarkably astute. The Hogfather has been...
Death paused.
Not killed, exactly. A god can never be completely killed. He has been severely reduced. Ye gods! He has enemies.
What did he do, miss a chimney?
Every living thing has enemies.
Everything?
Yes, powerful enemies. But they have gone too far this time. Now they are using people.
Who are?
The auditors. The auditors of reality. Those who think the universe should be a lot of rocks moving in curves. They think of life as a stain, a pestilence, getting in the way.
Of what?
The efficient running of the universe.
They want to get rid of us?
They want humanity to be less untruthful. The Hogfather is a symbol of wistful lying.
And why are you doing the job?
Someone must. It is vitally important. Before dawn, there must be belief in the Hogfather.
Why?
So that the sun will come up.
At which point, there was a scream of horror.
That sounded like the Bursar, said Ridcully.
The reason for the Bursar's scream lay on the floor of his bedroom. It was a man. He was dead. Some of the other wizards had got there first. Ridcully pushed through the crowd.
Ye gods, what a face! What happened? He looks as though he died of fright.
Well, said the Dean, the Bursar opened his wardrobe and found the man inside.
Really? I wouldn't have said the Bursar was all that frightening.
No, Arch-Chancellor, the corpse fell out on him.
Out of interest, why was the Bursar fiddling with his wardrobe at this time of night?
The wizards looked sheepish.
We were playing sardines, Arch-Chancellor.
What? Party games? You fellas?
It's Miss Smith. When we don't join in, she bursts into tears.
Who's Miss Smith?
The cheerful fairy. We joined in to stop her weeping.
At the moment, said the chair, the senior wrangler's doing some juggling for her.
But he can't juggle.
I think that's cheering her up a bit.
Ridcully looked at the corpse again.
Anyone know who he is?
The Dean took a small glass cube from his pocket and ran it over the corpse.
Quite a large thomic reading. I think he got here by magic.
He rummaged in the man's pockets and pulled out a handful of small white things.
Ah, teeth, said Ridcully. Who goes around with a pocket full of teeth?
A very bad fighter, said the chair.
Death looked up at Hex.
A machine for thinking?
Yes, sir.
Leave us.
Ponder scurried out of the room.
They say you are a thinker. Extend logically the result of the human race ceasing to believe in the Hogfather. Will the sun come up? Answer.
It took several minutes. The wheel spun, the ants ran, the mouse squeaked. An egg timer came down on a spring. Hex wrote, plus, plus, plus. The sun will not come up, plus, plus, plus.
Correct. How may this be prevented? Answer.
Plus, plus, plus. Regular and consistent belief, plus, plus, plus.
Good. I have a task for you.
Plus, plus, plus. Yes? Plus, plus, plus.
Here is your instruction. Believe in the Hogfather.
Plus, plus, plus. Yes. Plus, plus, plus.
Do you believe? Answer.
Plus, plus, plus. Yes. Plus, plus, plus.
Do you believe? Answer.
Plus, plus, plus.
Yes.
Plus, plus, plus.
Good.
Death turned to leave the room, but stopped when Hex began to write furiously. He went back and looked at the emerging paper. Plus, plus, plus. Dear Hogfather, for Hog's Watch, I want...
Oh, no. Frankly, I shall be glad when tonight's over.
Susan crept up the stairs, one hand on the hilt of the sword. She could hear voices above her. Someone said something about a lock. She peered over the edge of the stairwell. There were sleeping rolls strewn around. A couple of men were sitting on boxes, watching a third man who was working on a door in one curved wall.
"Hello?" said a cheerful voice by her ear. "What's your name?"
She turned her head slowly. First she saw the grey, glinting eye, then the yellow-white one with the tiny dot of a pupil. She started to move her hand, but the boy was there first, dragging the sword scabbard from her belt.
"Aha! My word! White bone handle, tasteless skull and bone decoration. Death's second favourite weapon, am I right? And this must mean that you are Susan Stohalit."
There was a click, and a gasp of excitement from the wizard working on the door.
"Fifth lock open, Mr. Teatime. They're based on Wodley's occult sequence."
Teatime didn't take his eyes off Susan.
"Ah.
I'll just have a look at number 6.
"How do you know who I am?" said Susan. "Oh, easy. Twerp's peerage. We read it in class, oh yes. I know quite a lot about you."
"And who are you?"
"Teatime. Jonathan... Tear to me."
Susan lined up the syllables in her head.
"You mean, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon?" "No, I spoke very clearly. Teatime. Now I have your grandfather's sword, I wonder... How are you getting on, Mr. Sidney? If it's Wodley's sequence, number 6 should be copper and blue-green light."
There was another click.
6th lock, Mr. Teatime. You want me to start on the 7th?
"Pure white light will be the key," said Teatime. "It may not be important now, thank you anyway."
"Yes. You may go." As he ran down the stairs, Sidney prayed the fervent prayers of an atheist who hopes to be wrong. And when no one ran after him, he slowed down, in case he lost his footing. It was then that he noticed that the steps underfoot were very large pitted flagstones, and the light had changed. His outstretched hand brushed against crumbling brick, and the ghosts of the past poured in, and he knew where he was. He was in the yard of Gamma Wimblestone's dame school. His mother wanted him to learn his letters and be a wizard. She also thought that long curls on a 5-year-old boy looked very smart. This was also the hunting ground of Ronnie Jenks, and, oh, gods, there was the tree Ronnie used to hide behind, big and menacing. And then, as a shadow blotted out the sun, he realised he was wearing curls. Teatime looked thoughtfully at the door.
"I suppose I should open it after coming all this way." "You're controlling children by their teeth," said Susan. "It does sound odd, doesn't it? But that's sympathetic magic for you. Do you think you're going to get away with this?" "Oh, dear. Do people really say that?"
Suddenly, Teatime was much closer.
"I've got away with it. No more Hogfather. And that's only the start. We'll keep the teeth coming in, of course. The possibilities..."
There was a rumble like an avalanche a long way off.
"What's this?"
"What's what?"
"You said no more Hogfather. There's got to be a Hogfather."
"You don't believe in the Hogfather, do you? A big boy like you."
"Yes."
Teatime pointed at Susan.
"She did it. She killed him."
The sheer playground effrontery of it shocked Susan.
"No, I didn't. Did? Didn't? Did?"
Susan looked down. Grey blotches were speeding across the white marble. Teatime pointed.
Grab her banjo. It's her fault.
Our mum says no hitting girls.
Tea time rolled his one good eye. Around his feet, the greyness seemed to be boiling in the stone, and it was around banjo, too.
I know you, Tea time, Susan said, as sweetly as she could for banjo's sake. You're the mad kid they're all scared of.
Banjo, grab her! The one who went insane and kicked and bit. Shut up! I bet no one wanted to play with you. Not the kid with no friends. I said shut up! The kind of little boy who looks up dolls' dresses. I didn't! Get her banjo!
Our mum said,
oh, to blazes with your mum!
There was a whisper of steel as Medium Dave drew his sword.
What did you say about our mum?
The grey marks flowed across the floor and formed a pool of shadow which grew darker and higher with astonishing speed. It grew a shape.
Have you been a bad boy, you little parisher?
The huge woman towered over all three men. One hand was holding a bundle of birch twigs. Medium Dave looked up into the enormous face of Ma Lilywhite. Every pore was a pothole, every brown tooth a tombstone. The thing growled.
You've been letting him get into trouble, our Davy.
He backed away.
No, Mum! No, no, Mum!
You need a good hiding, Banjo. You been playing with girls again?
Banjo sagged to his knees, tears of misery rolling down his face.
Sorry, Mum, no, Mum, sorry.
Then the figure turned to Medium Dave again. The sword dropped out of his hand. He started to cry.
No, Mum, no!
He collapsed, clutching his chest, and vanished. Banjo crawled across the floor to where his brother had been. Ma Lilywhite had vanished. Tea time started to laugh.
This place gets into your head, doesn't it? Well, I'm in touch with my inner child.
He reached out and grabbed Susan's hair, pulling her head down. Susan screamed.
And it's much more fun.
Susan felt his grip lessen. There was a wet thump, like a piece of steak hitting a slab, and Tea time went past her on his back.
No pulling girls' hair. That's bad.
Tea time bounced up like an acrobat and steadied himself on the railing of the stairwell. Then he drew the sword. The blade was invisible in the bright light of the tower.
It's true, then. So thin you can't see it. I'm going to have such fun.
You wouldn't dare use it. My grandfather will come after you. Susan saw one eye twitch.
I'll be ready for him.
He swung the sword, and she didn't try to duck.
But it doesn't work here,
she said, as he stared at it in astonishment. The blade doesn't exist here.
There's no death here.
She slapped him across the face.
Hi, I'm the inner babysitter.
She didn't punch. She just thrust out an arm, palm first, catching him under the chin and lifting him backwards over the rail. For an instant, he held on to nothing. And then, wearing the expression of someone trying to solve a complex problem, he fell away, spinning. Getting smaller. He hit the pile of teeth, sending them splashing across the marble. He jerked for a moment and vanished. There was a click behind them. The doors had swung open. Cold white mist rolled out across the floor.
Our mum,
said Banjo, trying to work things out.
Our mum was here.
Yes.
But it weren't our mum. "'Cause they buried our mum.
"'Yes.
"'Where's our Davy gone?'
"'Somewhere else, Banjo.
"'Somewhere. Nice.
"'Could be.
"'That's good. "'He'll be able to see our mum again.'
"'This much conversation seemed to exhaust him.
I want to go home.
She stared at his big stained face, pulled out a handkerchief and held it to his mouth. Spit. He obeyed. She dabbed the handkerchief over the worst parts and then tucked it into his hand. Have a good blow and keep the hanky. Please. Now, tuck your shirt in.
Yes, miss.
Now, go downstairs and sweep all the teeth out of the circle. Can you do that? Banjo nodded. Good. Off you go. Susan watched him plod off and then looked at the doorway. The room beyond the door was entirely white and mist swirled at knee level. There was a bed, a large four-poster, old and dusty, and the figure lying among the mounds of pillows looked very much like a frail old lady in a mob cap.
Hello, my dear.
Susan couldn't remember a grandmother, but this was the sort she'd have wanted. She thought she heard a child laugh. Somewhere almost out of hearing, children were at play. It was a pleasant, lulling sound. No.
Sorry, dear,
said the old lady. You're not the tooth fairy.
Oh, I am, dear.
Oh, Grandma, what big teeth you have. Susan picked up the candlestick by the bed. It seemed heavy enough. I don't think you're real, she said. You're out of my head. That's how you defend yourself. She swung the candlestick. It passed through the figure in the bed. See? You're not real.
Oh, I am real, dear. The candlestick wasn't.
Her outline changed. Susan looked down at the new shape. She grabbed at the thing, and the shape stayed. It struggled weakly in her grasp and wheezed. She let it down again. It collapsed in a heap. You're a bogeyman, aren't you? She said.
Not a...
The
bogeyman.
The first bogeyman?
I remember when the land was different. Ice.
The black sunken eyes glinted. Suddenly the thing reared up, bony arms waving.
I was the dark in the cave, the shadow in the trees. You've heard about the primal scream? That was me.
It started coughing.
And then... That thing, all light and bright, lightning you could carry, hot little sunshine, and then there was no more dark, just shadows, and then...
Susan sat on the bed. There's still plenty of bogeymen.
Hiding under beds, locking in cupboards. If you had seen me in the old days, when they came into the deep caves to draw their hunting pictures, I could roar in their heads so that their stomachs dropped out of their bottoms.
Yes, all the old skills are dying out.
I was the first. Others came later, and now I was no better than them, frightening maids, curdling cream. And one night I thought, why?
You thought, what was the point of it all?
Frightening children, did used to be children in the ice times. Big humans, little humans, not children. I started to watch them. There was a different world in their heads. In their heads, that's where the old days were now. The old days, when it was all young. So I watched over them, kept them safe. Sometimes I just sit here listening to them.
And the teeth?
You can't leave teeth around. Anyone might get them do terrible things. I kept the teeth safe, and...
It started to shake. The money? Susan prompted.
Money everywhere, buried in holes, back of sofas, it adds up. Money for the tooth, very important, otherwise it's thieving. And then I was old, but I found people. Give them money and they do their jobs. And this place, it grew up round me.
The trees and the sky, out of their heads.
And then they came, stealing.
The bogeyman groaned. You look terrible.
Thank you.
I mean, ill.
Very old. All those men, too much effort. You don't die here. Just get old. Listening to the laughter.
The figure faded. Susan sat for a while, listening to the distant chatter. She got up and went downstairs. Banjo had found a broom and mop somewhere and was carefully washing the chalk away. Banjo?
Yes, miss.
You like it here?
There's trees, miss.
She thought, well, and why not? What other kind of life has he got? I think it would be a good idea if you did the Tooth Fairy's job, Banjo.
Won't the Tooth Fairy mind, miss?
You do it until she comes back.
All right, miss.
I'll get people to keep an eye on you. I think food comes in on the cart.
Yes, miss. I will keep things tidy, miss.
And now I've got to go.
Right, miss.
She stepped out into the perpetually sunlit world. Bilious and Violet hurried towards her.
Well, they're all gone, said Susan, to wherever they go. Look, you two can make yourselves useful. Go and help Banjo.
Banjo?
He's in charge.
All right, said Bilious. I'm sure we can tell him what to do.
No, too many people have told him what to do. Just help him get started. But if the Hogfather comes back now, she thought, he'll vanish, won't you?
I'm giving up my old job, said Bilious. I'm going to go on working as a holiday relief for the other gods.
He gave her a pleading look.
Really?
Susan looked at Violet. Oh, well, maybe if she believes in him, at least it might work.
Good. Have fun.
I'm going home. This is a hell of a way to spend Hogswatch. She found Binky waiting by the stream. The auditors fluttered anxiously. One said,
damn.
One said,
they're still the Hogfather.
They hovered for a while, unspeaking. Eventually one said,
we may have to take...
It paused, loath even to think the word.
A risk.
Bed, thought Susan as the mists rolled past her. And in the morning, decent human things like coffee and porridge and bed. Binky stopped. A skeletal hand had grabbed his bridle. Death materialized.
It is not over. They torment him still.
Death climbed into the saddle and reached around her for the reins. Look, I went...
Yes, I know. The control of belief. What a simple way to make millions of children cease to believe in the Hogfather.
And what were you doing?
I have kept a space. The Hogfather will have something to come back to, at least.
What have I got to do now?
You must bring the Hogfather back.
Oh, must I? For peace and goodwill and the tinkling of fairy bells?
No. So that the sun will rise.
The senior wrangler wasn't attending the feast. He'd got one of the maids to bring a tray up to his rooms where he was entertaining.
A little more wine, Gwendolyn?
I don't mind if I do, Mr. Wrangler.
Call me Horace, please.
Everyone's been so kind,
said the cheerful fairy.
I'm afraid I'm rather dull company.
She blew her nose noisily.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Perhaps I could show you Arch-Chancellor Bowles' remembrance. It's got a very interesting ceiling.
Would it cheer me up, do you think?
Oh, it would. It would. I'll just go and...
He fled into his dressing room and slammed the door behind him. In the great hall, the bursar eyed the nearest roast pig with nervous anticipation and tucked his napkin firmly under his chin. There was a sound like coarse fabric ripping and a crash as something landed on the table. Roast potatoes and gravy filled the air. The bursar blinked, looked down, and found he was about to plunge his fork into a human head. The wizards heaved aside the smashed crockery.
He just fell out of the air. Is he an assassin? Why is he holding a sword without a sharp bit? Is he dead?
Ponder put his ear to the fallen youth's chest.
He's, not breathing. Breathing spell,
muttered the chair.
Spalt's forthright respirator, perhaps?
Ridcully reached through the wizards and pulled out the black-clad man by a leg. He held him upside down in his big hand and thumped him heavily on the back. He met their astonished gaze.
Used to do this on the farm. Works a treat on baby goats.
The corpse made a noise somewhere between a choke and a cough.
Make some space, you fellas.
Ridcully cleared an area of table with one sweep of his spare arm. Tea time opened his eyes.
Excuse me, said Ponder, with his notebook open. Did you see any bright lights? Was there a shining tunnel? What's all this, Mr. Stimmons? I should talk to him, sir. He's had a near-death experience. We all have. It's called living.
Tea time had already risen on his elbows.
There was a sword. On the floor, said the Dean. Looks like a thin blue line in the air. Excuse me.
Tea time picked it up.
I really must be off.
He ran from the hall.
What was that all about?
Said the chair, turning his attention to the remains of the feast. Under the table, the blue hen of happiness relieved itself on the bursar's foot.
There is not much time. We must hurry, said Death,
as Binky galloped through the icy mountains.
There are enemies.
They're all dead.
Other enemies.
What others?
The auditors. They run the universe, and they hate life.
Why?
It is irregular. It was never supposed to happen, and they hate humans most of all.
Why the hog?
It is the things you believe which make you human.
The mists parted. Sharp peaks were around them. These looked like the mountains where the Castle of Bones was.
They are. He has gone back to a place he knows. An early place.
Binky cantered low over the snow, and Susan saw something below. Small dark shapes moved across the whiteness, running as if they were in pursuit of something. There's some sort of chase. Binky dropped until his hooves grazed the tops of the pine trees. Now she could see the hunters clearly. They were large dogs. Their quarry was dodging among snowdrifts.
It's a pig. A boar. They drive it towards the cliff.
She could hear the panting of the big blue-black creature. Blood streamed onto the snow from its wounds.
This boar, it's... Yes. Well, stop them. You must. This is a human thing.
The dogs moved oddly. They weren't running, but flowing across the snow. They don't look like real dogs.
No. What can I do?
Death nodded towards the boar. Binky was keeping level with it now, a few feet away. Ahead, the snowfield had a cut-off look.
When he reaches the edge, he will stand at bay. He must not. Understand? These are not real dogs. If they catch him, he won't just die. He will never be
So Susan leapt, arms outstretched. Landing on the animal's back, she clung to its neck, her face buried in its sharp bristles. She could feel the heat under her, and its stank of sweat and blood. And pig, a lot of pig. Then the precipice was in front of her. She grabbed an ear in each hand. "Turn left!" she screamed and hauled. To her amazement, the boar grunted and scrambled away. The hounds turned to follow, flying at the boar's heels again. Susan looked around in the grey, lightless air. There was a shoulder of rock, sharp and narrow, a giant's knife edge connecting the plain to the hills beyond. It was better than nothing. It was nothing with snow on. The boar reached the edge and hesitated. Susan dug her heels in. Snout down, legs moving like pistons, the beast plunged out onto the ridge. Snow sprayed as its trotters sought for purchase. "That's right, that's right, that's..." A trotter slipped. Susan flung herself the other way, clinging to the neck, and felt the dragging abyss under her. Pig and woman rocked for a moment, and then a trotter caught a footing, and the boar plunged forward along the ridge. Susan risked a look behind. The dogs still moved oddly. Not dogs, she thought, dog shapes. Suddenly, there was another shock underfoot. The world tilted. She felt the boar's muscles bunch and send it soaring as a slab of ice and rock came away and began the long slide into darkness. Susan was thrown off when the creature landed and tumbled into deep snow. She pulled herself upright. A few feet away, the boar lay on its side, steaming and panting. The dogs had reached the gap and were struggling to prevent themselves slipping. They turned, still sliding, and tried to make it back to the plateau. A figure barred their way. It seemed to have been made of snow, three balls of snow piled on one another. It had black dots for eyes, the semblance of a mouth, a carrot for the nose, and for the arms, it seemed, two twigs. One was holding a curved stick. The dogs backed away. The snow broke off in chunks, revealing a gaunt figure in a flapping black robe. Death spat out the carrot. "Ho, ho, ho." He touched the scythe. There was a click as the blade flashed into life. The leading dog started to slip again on the snow and scrabbled desperately to save itself from the long, cold drop. It managed, for a moment, to become a grey, cowled figure. It said, "You cannot do this. There are rules."
"Yes, but you broke them. How dare you?"
The scythe blade was a thin blue outline in the grey light. Death seemed to grow. Light flared in his eye sockets. When next he spoke, avalanches fell in the mountains.
"Ho, ho, ho."
Susan heard the wails die away. The boar lay in white snow that was now red with blood. She knelt and tried to lift its head. It was dead. One eye stared at nothing. The tongue lolled. Sobs welled up inside her. She drummed on its flank with both fists.
"No, you can't! We saved you!"
Then a breeze blew up. Something stirred in the landscape, something under the snow. The branches on the ancient trees shook gently, dislodging needles of ice. The sun rose. The light streamed over Susan like a silent gale. It was dazzling. She crouched back, covering her eyes. The great red ball turned frost to fire along the winter branches. And there was a groan. A man lay in the snow where the boar had been. He was naked, except for an animal skin loincloth. His hair, matted with grease, was long and had been woven into a thick plait. He was bleeding everywhere the hounds had caught him, and the man was tattooed. Blue whorls and spirals haunted his skin under the blood. He opened his eyes and stared at the sky. Then he made a gurgling sound. He clutched at his throat, choking. His breath sounded like a saw. "What's the matter? What's the matter?" said Susan. He pawed at his throat. Now he was on his hands and knees, fighting for breath. "Something stuck?" Susan slapped him as hard as she could on the back. The man coughed and something bounced off a tree and landed in the snow. It was a small, black bean. A bird trilled high on a branch. As Susan looked up, a wren fluttered to another twig. When she looked back, the man was different. He had clothes now, heavy furs with a fur hood and fur boots. He was supporting himself on a stone-tipped spear. Something hurried through the wood, barely visible except by its shadow. Susan glimpsed for a moment a white hare before it sprang away. She looked back. The man looked older. He was wearing thick white robes like a priest. A bird called again, and now, a little way off, four huge boars stood and steamed in front of a sledge that looked as if it had been put together out of crudely trimmed trees. The Hogfather climbed aboard. He'd put on weight and was now a huge red-robed man. Ice crystals settled here and there on the cloth. Only in the occasional sparkle of frost was there a hint of hair or tusk. He reached down to extricate a false beard, which he held up questioningly.
"Sorry," said a voice behind Susan. "That was mine."
The Hogfather nodded at Death, as one craftsman to another, and then at Susan. It wasn't thanks. It was a recognition that something that needed doing had indeed been done. Then he shook the reins, clicked his teeth, and the sledge slid away.
"I remember hearing," said Susan, "that the idea of the Hogfather wearing red and white was invented quite recently."
"No, it was remembered."
Now, the Hogfather was a red dot on the other side of the valley.
"I will give you a lift back."
"Thank you. Now, tell me..."
"What would have happened if you hadn't saved him?"
"Yes."
"The sun would not have risen."
"Really? Then what would have happened, pray?"
"A mere ball of flaming gas would have illuminated the world."
The senior wrangler hummed cheerfully to himself as he stepped out into his study. "Sorry for the delay, but..." There was no one there. Only very far off, the sound of someone blowing their nose, mingling with the glingle, 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 glingle of fading magic. Binky trotted to a standstill on the air beside the nursery balcony. Susan climbed down. Would you like a drink?"
"A cup of cocoa."
"Right." As Susan headed into the tiny kitchen, Death sat down in the creaking wicker chair. He heard the clatter of cups and a sound like indrawn breath, and then silence. The door opened. To his horror, Death saw a small child come out of the bedroom, amble sleepily across the floor, and unhook the stockings from the mantelpiece. It was halfway back before it noticed him.
"Susan's got a poker, you know. Last week she picked a bogey up by his nose."
My goodness me."
"I give Gawain his stocking, then come and watch."
The child padded out.
Susan.
Susan backed out of the kitchen, a kettle in her hand. There was a figure behind her. In the half-light, the sword gleamed blue along its blade. Its glitter reflected off one glass eye.
"Well, well," said Tea Time quietly. "Now this is unexpected."
The sword hummed back and forth.
"I wonder if it is possible to kill Death. Stand up, sir. And I'd rather you didn't try any last-minute stuff."
Death stood up.
"I am last-minute stuff."
From the next room came the sound of a whistle.
"I don't remember them asking for anything that made a noise," Susan said.
"Oh, There has to be something in the stocking that makes a noise. Otherwise, what is 4:30 a.m. for?
There are children, said Tea Time. Call them. Certainly not. It will be instructive. Tea Time pointed the sword at Susan. I said, call them. Susan glanced at her grandfather. He nodded. Gawain! Tula! There was a padding of feet, and two solemn faces appeared round the door.
Ah, come in! Come in, curly-haired tots, said Tea Time. I've caught this bogeyman. Scary, eh? What shall we do with him?
It's only a skeleton, said Gawain.
In an absent-minded way, Susan started to swing the kettle. Tea Time spun round. Put it down, please, slowly. Susan knelt down and put the kettle on the hearth. Her hand closed over the poker. Tea Time saw her start to turn. He stepped behind Death, sword raised. Susan threw the poker over arm. It hit Death's robe and vanished. Tea Time smiled at Susan. He peered dreamily at the sword in his hand. It fell out of his fingers. He looked down at the poker in his chest.
Oh, no, he said as he folded up. It couldn't have gone through you.
It only kills monsters, said Tula.
Stop time now, commanded Susan.
Death snapped his fingers. The room took on the greyish purple of stationary time. The clock paused its ticking. The children had to watch that.
Educational. The world will teach them about monsters soon enough.
But they saw he's human.
I think they had a very good idea of what he was.
Death prodded the fallen Tea Time with his foot.
Stop playing dead, Mr. Teatime.
The ghost of the assassin sprang up like a jack-in-the-box.
You got it right!
Of course.
Tea Time began to fade.
I'll take the body. That will prevent inconvenient questions.
Death picked up the corpse and slung it over his shoulder.
You did know the poker would go through me?
Of course. In this room it's pretty powerful.
Ah.
Her grandfather stared at her for a moment, then turned towards the balcony.
Well then. Happy Hogswatch?
Yes. Happy Hogswatch. Death paused again at the window.
And good night, children. Everywhere.
The beggars walked their erratic and occasionally backward walk along the city streets, while fresh mounting snow began to fall. Occasionally, one of them belched happily. They all wore paper hats, except for foul old Ron, who'd eaten his.
The goose was good,
said Coffin Henry, picking his nose.
What were that greasy stuff?
Said Arnold sideways.
That, my dear fella,
said the duck man,
was pâté de foie gras, and very good too.
Half my fault, isn't it?
Ah, the world of haute cuisine.
The snow began to settle gently on the River Unk.
Well, happy new year, Arnold.
Happy new year, duck man. And your duck.
What duck?
Happy New Year, Emery. Happy New Year, Ron. Bagger him. And God bless us, everyone,
said Arnold sideways. And then there was only the snow. After a while, it began to melt in the sun.